interested in sampling from the thermal Gibbs state of some many body local Hamiltonian, which I'm going to write, ooh, is this visible? Okay. As like a, yeah, a sum of local terms at inverse temperature beta. So this is just the mixed state describing the canonical ensemble in statistical physics, which describes a system in contact with a large heat reservoir at like a fixed temperature, T. So our main results are, we come up with a dissipative quantum algorithm, which is based very heavily on this paper by Toby, which also came out this year, which is a dissipative quantum algorithm for finding ground states of many-body local Hamiltonians. So our work kind of adapts that to the problem of sampling from the Gibbs state. And yeah, the key benefits is that it has a very simple local implementation, so it doesn't require large global circuits like QPE, and it works for arbitrary Hamiltonians, so you don't need a guarantee on whether or not it's gapped and so on. And further, maybe a point of difference from existing algorithms is that it comes with certifiable precision and runtime bounds. Okay, cool, yeah. So the outline, very simple, is I'll introduce the problem, describe the algorithm, and then if I have time, as a bonus at the end, I'll describe how using the running, using like the stopping statistics of the algorithm, you kind of get an estimation of the partition function for free. Cool. Okay, so yeah, just to start with the classical case. So in a classical statistical mechanical system, the Hamiltonian is just obviously some function of a many-body state, x, which could just be like a list of spins. And the analog of the Gibbs state is just the Boltzmann distribution, right? So where the probability of any configuration is just given by something inversely proportional to the Hamiltonian evaluated on that list of spins. And it's normalized by this guy, the partition function. So in the classical case, this is already sharp B hard. So in the quantum case, as explored by I think two people in the audience today, it's expected to be even harder. But nevertheless, Gibbs distributions are super useful. They have applications in machine learning, MCMC optimization, and so on. So even though it's a hard problem, we're still interested in finding heuristic methods for solving it. So in the classical case, the sort of canonical way of sampling from the Gibbs distribution is very old. It's this Mitropoulos-Hastings algorithm, which is pretty simple to describe. So you start from some arbitrary many-body state, and you propose an updated state from some symmetric proposal distribution. So for example, in your list of spins, you could just randomly choose one of them and flip it. And then you compute this ratio of these factors, the Hamiltonian evaluated on the proposed new state and the old state. And then you either update, to X primed with some transition probability determined by P. So it's known that by design, the Mitropoulos-Hastings algorithm, it generates a Markov chain, whose fixed point or stationary distribution is the Gibbs distribution. So a key point is that if the Hamiltonian is local, then computing the transition probabilities is local, and also the update rule is local, right? It's just flipping a spin. So just repeating that point, the transition probabilities are local, and also the algorithm requires that you evaluate the energy or the Hamiltonian on your many-body state. And classically, this is easy. It's just a function evaluation, right? But if you try and generalize this algorithm sort of naively to the quantum case, then you're presented with two immediate difficulties. So first is if you have some state psi, then you need to evaluate the energy given a single copy of that state. So generally, this requires, in the general case, this requires a fairly expensive quantum algorithm like QPE. And the other difficulty is, by analogy with the original Mitropoulos-Hastings, you either need to accept some updated state, psi primed, or revert back to the original state psi. However, obviously, if you estimate the energy, then you normally you project onto an energy eigenstate. So it's not clear how to go back to the state that you started with or update to your updated state. So the original metropolis, the original quantum metropolis algorithm, which was proposed in 2011, solves this second issue. But as far as I can understand, it still requires running a complex global quantum circuit to evaluate the energy. And there have been many, many works following from that original quantum metropolis algorithm, which take a variety of approaches, but they all have different requirements. So I'll just outline some of those very, very, at a very surface level now. So there are some methods which are sort of directly inspired by quantum metropolis. So just using some random walk or Grover techniques to give you a polynomial speed up over the original quantum metropolis. There are also imaginary time evolution methods, variational approaches, which can work very well in practice, but obviously they're heuristic. You need some kind of ansatz, and you need to perform some kind of non-trivial classical optimization over quantum circuits. So the other two remaining approaches are sort of emulating or sort of physics inspired. So you emulate actually putting your system in contact with a heat reservoir. So one way is to actually couple it to like a large reservoir of ancillas and emulate the thermalization procedure sort of on the nose. That requires a large supply of fresh ancilla, and you need to be able to simulate the time evolution of a large combined system. And the other approach, which has a lot of recent interest, is to simulate the thermalization process on the system directly with the help of simulating the Davies generator, which generates this quantum Markov semigroup, which reproduces the thermalization on just your original system. And that generates a quantum Markov chain whose fixed point is the Gibbs state. And I guess like a common feature of these is that generally you need to do sort of large global operations on your state. Yeah, so this like last approach, simulating the Davies generator was taken by these guys earlier this year, which achieved the current best dependence of the runtime on the precision to which you want to obtain the Gibbs state at the end of the day. And they have also a very comprehensive review of the existing methods, so I'm just going to point there. The main point I want to make is that a lot of these methods, they can be very effective, generally generate the Gibbs state as like the fixed point of the Markov chain. So the runtime is dependent on the mixing time of that Markov chain, which is in general very difficult to compute analytically. Like it's very hard to get a closed form expression for these guys. So apart from in some very special cases like commuting Hamiltonians. Okay, so we tried to get around some of those difficulties by adapting Toby's DQE algorithm. So one way it kind of overcomes some of these difficulties is that each step in the algorithm just consists of performing weak measurements of local terms in the Hamiltonian, and then performing some kind of resampling based on the outcome of those measurements. And instead of running a Markov chain until it reaches the fixed point, we use a probabilistic stopping rule. So conditioned on the previous outcomes of measurement, we choose probabilistically whether or not to stop the algorithm or continue to run. And this allows us to derive some explicit expressions for the runtime of the algorithm. Okay, cool. So I come from like a high energy physics background, so I'm never like sure what things are like standard formalisms and stuff. So I thought I'd introduce it anyway. In this talk and in the paper, we use like the formulation of quantum measurement via a quantum instrument. So I'll just describe it in like the two outcome case. So if we have two outcomes, 0 and 1, then describing a measurement via a quantum instrument is just given by two CP maps, E0 and E1, such that the sum is trace preserving. And the outcome probability of measuring 0 or 1 is just given by the trace of the relevant CP map. And the post-measurement state is just given by applying the CP map and normalizing by the probability. So yeah, these guys can be described by a quantum channel from the space of density matrices on your original system to that tensored with an additional ancilla, which stores the outcome of the measurement, and then performing a projective measurement on the classical register. So I'll just use this way of describing measurements. Okay, so this is the algorithm. So I'll state the most general form of the algorithm first, before then diving into the details and showing how one can retrieve the Gibbs state. So yeah, if we take some local Hamiltonian H, oh yeah, obviously, please feel free to interrupt with questions. Yeah, anytime. Yeah. So if we take some local Hamiltonian H, we define this quantum instrument where the zero outcome case is just given by conjugating the state with some operator k, which I'll describe in a sec. And the one outcome case so has this prefactor giving the one minus the probability of obtaining this, but it resamples to some constant state here, rho zero. And yeah, so in the above, k is a Hermitian operator, which has to square to less than identity for E0 to be CP. And for the moment, we'll just say that k is close to some injective function of the Hamiltonian. Okay, and also another input that we need in this algorithm is a set of probabilities. So indexed from 0, 1, 2, 3. These guys, if you like, just think of them as a biased coin flip. So the DGS algorithm just consists of successively applying this this quantum instrument, so performing a measurement with two outcomes, 0 and 1, starting from some initial state, rho 0. And if you measure 1, then you're just sort of back to square one, you've reset your initial state. But if you measure zero, then you look at how many zeros you've measured just consecutively previously. So you've measured 5 zeros, then you flip a coin with bias probabilities R5 and 1 minus R5. And if it's heads, then you just terminate the algorithm. And if it's tails, then you continue to run and continue to apply the quantum instrument. Yeah, so it's a very simple implementation. So yeah, what we'll show is that if we choose these probabilities appropriately, as well as this Hermitian operator k, then we can sample from the Gibbs state with the properties that I promised, like certifiable precision, local implementation, and so on. Okay. Yeah, we should stop there if there are any questions. So yeah, as I said, the outcome one here, if you get the outcome one, then you just resample the entire state to the initial state, rho zero. So in practice, we're going to take this to be just the maximally mixed state, because that's super easy to sample from to reset to. So yeah, our strategy will be first to derive the expected output state of this algorithm in terms of these coin flip probabilities, Rn, and this Hermitian operator k. And we'll show that if we choose these guys appropriately, then we'll sample from the Gibbs state. Okay. So yeah, so our first task is to determine what the expected output state of the DGS algorithm is at the stopping time. So yeah, it's actually like super easy to derive. And it's very similar to these kind of like university interview questions about coin flips and expected number of coin flips. So if you understand this example, then you understand how to derive the expected state of the algorithm. So yeah, so this kind of problem is like, you know, if you toss a fair coin repeatedly, until five heads occurs? Like, what is the expected number of tosses? Until you stop. So there are a bunch of different ways of solving this kind of problem, like generating function methods, recursive methods. Like if you Google this, then there's a massive Stack Exchange thread where loads of people are coming up with a very clever way of solving these problems. But the one that we use is very simple. So yeah, if you let E be the number of the expected number of coin tosses until you get five heads, then you imagine like doing this experiment. Like you imagine like tossing this coin. So if your first outcome is tails, so that happens with probability half, then you're kind of back to square one, right? And then you imagine continuing to toss. And at that point, you expect your total number of coin tosses to be E plus one. Alternatively, you could toss a heads first and then a tails, and that sets you back to square one again. And that happens with probability a quarter, and then your expected number of coin tosses in that situation is E plus two, and so on, until you consider the possibility where you just toss five heads in a row. Right. So then you just get this linear equation, which you can solve easily for 62. Right. So this is the kind of this is all the math that's in this proof. Right. So yeah, let's generalize to the expected output state of the DGS algorithm. So yeah, I'll explain I guess this in parts. It's super simple. It's just manipulating a linear equation. So you start off with your initial state row zero, and you haven't got any heads yet. So you flip a biased coin with probabilities R naught and one minus R naught. And if you get R naught, then the DGS algorithm just tells you to stop. Right? So in this expected state here, you just get R naught times row naught. Like alternatively, let's say you got tails, then you're instructed to apply the quantum instrument again. If you get the outcome one, then with probability this guy, then you're reset to the maximally mixed state and the algorithm tells you to just start over again. So in analogy with the coin flip question, you just replace the state that you get here by the expected state that you get from running the algorithm. So this is like, by analogy with this coin toss question, it's just like this guy here, or this guy here, or this guy here. Or you could measure zero from the quantum instrument. Right? Then you get this state here, and then you have to flip the coin with probabilities R1 or one minus R1. If you flip, if you get the outcome heads, then the algorithm tells you to stop. And this gives you this contribution. If you get the outcome tails, then you apply the quantum instrument again. So you either go along here or you go along here. You get this contribution. Right. So at the end of the day, you just get a linear equation for the expected state. You move all of these guys to the left-hand side. You just get an explicit expression for the expected state of running the algorithm. Yeah. Very simple. Right. So yeah, the expected state from running the DGS algorithm is given by just this expression here. So the denominator is just a normalization, but the numerator is just expressed in terms of these coin flip probabilities, where capital Rn is just the product of 1 minus Rj from 0 to n minus 1. And you've applied this the zero outcome case CP map n times to the initial state. So I guess the nice thing about this result is that all of the sort of slightly gross normalizations here in the denominators kind of drop out after you do these manipulations in the expected outcome state of the algorithm. Right? So you don't have to evaluate the trace of E0 applied n times to the initial state, for example. So it's kind of feasible that if you choose E0, which is just conjugation by k, and these coin flip probabilities Rn appropriately, then you're kind of just like, yeah.
Sorry, because you said that the normalizations drop out in the expected state.
Yeah.
But aren't they there?
Oh, sorry, yeah, but this is, I just mean like for each n, there isn't, this guy here in the numerator isn't like divided by trace E0 and applied n times. Like it's like the like these guys in the denominators, they kind of drop out when you So like you don't have to estimate like trace k to the 2n or something. I think this is like kind of what happens in the original quantum metropolis as well. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's the first result. But I guess this isn't super interesting yet because as of yet, this isn't related to the Gibbs state at all, but we'll get there. But before that, I just want to say that the expected runtime of the algorithm can just be derived in exactly the same way, right? Because you just replace each sort of leaf in this tree on the left-hand side by the number of steps it takes to get there, right? So here it's 0, here is 1, here is 2. Here on the right-hand side, we replace each leaf on the nth level by n plus 1, which is kind of like the number of steps it takes to get there along the tree, plus another copy of the expected runtime of the algorithm. So this is like very close in analogy to that coin flip warm-up question, right? So and then you just sum over each of these leaves weighted by the probability along this tree to get there. So this is like super similar to, well, it's a lot of slides previous now, but this is like directly analogous to deriving the expected stopping time of that coin flip question, right? So again, you get like a super, super simple expression for the expected runtime of the algorithm. You do some simplifications and you can show that it's just given by this closed form expression in terms of the coin flip probabilities and K, or the zero CP map. So yeah, this is nice, I think. Like it's explicit closed form expression for the runtime, expected runtime. Okay, so now let's start specializing these parameters to try and reach the Gibbs state. So yeah, just as a point of notation, this capital Rn is just the product of these. 1 minus these coin flip probabilities. So yeah, capital Rn depends on little Rn. And E0 or the zero CP map from the quantum instrument is just given by conjugation with this Hermitian operator K. So yeah, first thing is like as stated, we just take the initial state, alternatively like the state we reset to if we obtain like the wrong outcome 1 in the DGS algorithm. We just take that to be the maximally mixed state. D is the dimension of the Hilbert space here. And so you just get this expression for the expected state as an even Taylor series in K. All right, this is like kind of where the project started from. Like the expected state is some Taylor series in K. So like super naively, you might imagine that if I choose these coefficients carefully and K is some function of H, you can just like mold that Taylor series to the Taylor series of the Gibbs state. So like that was like the very like simple intuition for like why something like this might work. So yeah, if you choose the coin flip probabilities such that they are proportional to some constant lambda raised to the power of 2n divided by 2n factorial, then you get an expected state. I mean, these are just the Taylor series coefficients for Koch, right? So you get this nice closed form expression for the expected state of the algorithm. And that seems like very arbitrary at the moment, but it should become clear why we made those choices in a sec. And just to say that this choice is actually possible to make. So if you just impose these inequalities, like these RNs should be valid probabilities, like valid coin flips. So you just solve it recursively and you get an expression for Rn in terms of the initial. So R0, where R0 is also just a coin flip probability. And these guys are bounded between 0 and 1 if R0 is bounded by 1 over Koch lambda. Lambda is just a free parameter at the moment. And it's kind of intuitively clear that the runtime is minimized if these RNs are minimized, right? Because the RNs are telling me, like, if I flip a coin with probabilities Rn, 1 minus Rn, if I get the Rn outcome, it's telling me to stop, to terminate the algorithm. So like sort of just intuitively, if you maximize the RNs, then you're minimizing the runtime of the algorithm. You can obviously show this, but yeah, just some intuition. So we just choose R naught to be the maximum value, which is 1/cosh lambda. Okay. So yeah, probably those choices seemed super arbitrary for now. But they're not arbitrary. And the reason they're not arbitrary is for is because the cosh is very similar to the exponential function. Right? So like the Gibbs state is like the inverse exponential of the Hamiltonian. And that's what we're leveraging. That's all we're leveraging. So yeah, why do we make those choices? Let's let kappa be an upper bound on the operator norm of H. So H is like H is the sum without this norm of these local terms HI. So just triangle inequality, we can upper bound the operator norm of H by just taking the sum of the operator norms of all the individual terms. So now let's make this choice for K, this Hermitian operator, which appears in the zero outcome CP map. I think you can ignore the prefactor for now, but yeah, this is the important term. 1 minus epsilon, where epsilon is like ultimately going to enter an expression for the precision of the algorithm, times the Hamiltonian, but normalized by kappa. So this normalization ensures that K is bounded. K is K squared is less than the identity in the operator sense. And let's the lambda, which was a free parameter in the slide previously, this guy, let lambda be equal to beta, the inverse temperature, times kappa, this this bound on the operator norm of the Hamiltonian, divided by the precision, and also this funny factor here, which is not super important. So if you just plug these guys naively into the expected state, then you do some easy manipulations, and you just get the fact that the expected state of the algorithm is very close to the Gibbs state that you wanted, right? Up to order e to the minus beta kappa over epsilon. Right? So this is very, very small.
What is epsilon? Is it the gap?
No, epsilon is just kind of a choice that you make here. Yeah, just a small parameter, which ultimately will determine like how close your the runtime is sort of the smaller you make epsilon, like the runtime will scale exponentially with that, as it kind of expected because the problem is hard. But yeah, I guess you can think about it just like a precision parameter that you want at the moment. So it's a choice that you make in K. Yeah. But yeah, so the upshot is that the algorithm produces a state very close to the Gibbs state because of this very simple fact that the cosine, the cosh is very close to the exponential. But there is a problem with this. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe a silly question. So if I take epsilon to zero, it looks like K has nothing to do with H, but that's when your state's becoming very close to the correct one.
When epsilon is close to zero, and then K has nothing to do with.
Like then H is just dropping out of the expression for K, right?
Right.
So, and apparently the algorithm is producing something really close to the correct state.
Yeah, I think because then like you end up applying K like a bunch of times, like the runtime will also scale sort of as like e to the 1/ε, for example.
So it doesn't make sense strictly at epsilon equals zero, but.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You need it to be non-zero for sure. Yeah, exactly, because otherwise it just doesn't depend on the Hamiltonian, right? Like, the algorithm doesn't know anything about the Hamiltonian, yeah. And yeah, and also, this guy won't make sense anymore, right? The lambda is like the, like, yeah. Lambda is like, I mean, this guy sort of looks like, it's sort of like a even Poisson distribution type thing, right? So like, yeah, in this expected state, I mean, that's maybe a little bit, I'm not sure if there's any point. These guys kind of look like probabilities in like just taking the even terms in the Poisson distribution. So sort of like maybe intuitively like the algorithm sort of resembles that kind of process in the large lambda limit. So the expected runtime of the algorithm will also diverge. So you end up applying K a bunch of times, I think, yeah. Okay. Nice, thanks. Okay. So yeah, as I said, like this prefactor is not super important at the moment, so we can ignore it, but it will come up later. And this K, like this guy here, is also used by Toby in this distributive quantum eigensolver paper. And like in that context, it's very important that K is what's known as an approximate ground state projector, which was originally used for proving area laws in this paper. But for us, like we're not actually using any of that technology. We're just using the fact that K is sort of linear in the Hamiltonian, that it's Hermitian, and that it defines a good CP map. But yeah, the key thing that I want to draw your attention to is that implementing K, this guy here, because the Hamiltonian appears like sort of in this form, it requires global measurements, right? Which is like one of the things that we wanted to get around with when we started thinking about this. So we want to upgrade this to only requiring local measurements.
Sorry, why is that linear injective? What's the reason?
Because I guess at the end of the day, well, that's actually something we're probably still thinking about, like the actual strict requirements on K, but it's sort of the fact that at the end of the day, you get something, in the most general form of the algorithm, you get some like Taylor series expansion in K, and these coefficients are all positive by virtue of these RNs being like coin flip probabilities between 0 and 1. So you end up having to like mold a Taylor series in K to a Taylor series in H where all the terms are sort of positive. So sort of condition, like it's a condition on like, yeah, being able to like adjust these parameters in this Taylor series to be able to hit the Gibbs state. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So you can imagine if it's like not injective, then you might not be able to hit that function. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so yeah, back to this issue of this guy requiring global measurements. So yeah, we want to upgrade it to local measurements. So yeah, the upshot is that you can approximate it by this K primed, which just requires local measurements. So these are products in different orders because the individual factors are not commuting. But just like piece by piece, these KIs are sort of approximate ground state projectors for each local term in the Hamiltonian. So these KIs are bounded as well. Kappa I is just related to the operator norm of these local terms in the Hamiltonian. And as before, kappa is this upper bound on the operator norm of the entire Hamiltonian. So, I mean, this is this fact is simple to prove if you just like binomial expand this guy. Then you can see that up to order epsilon, it agrees with this AGSP from before up to order epsilon squared terms.
Right.
But this guy is just successfully weak measuring local terms of the Hamiltonian in succession. Right. So it kind of approximates the AGSP K from before up to order epsilon squared terms. And this guy is locally implementable. So if we run the DGS algorithm with the CP map given by conjugating with K primed, then just running exactly the same results from previously, we get an expected state, which is close to the Gibbs state of some perturbed Hamiltonian H primed up to this inversely exponentially suppressed factor. And the perturbed Hamiltonian H primed is close up to order epsilon to the original Hamiltonian H. So here, epsilon is your precision parameter, M is the number of terms in your Hamiltonian, kappa is this upper bound on the operator norm of the Hamiltonian. Actually, since I wrote this talk, I should have updated it. Jan Lucas has managed to like find some like tighter bounds on these norms here. So this is not like the optimal precision. Yeah. And this is because like using the previous lemma, we can write K primed like in this way, which mimics the form of the way that we wrote K, this original AGSP. And then we just apply all of the same arguments as before. So K prime, the way to think of this like local AGSP is that it is the same as the one previously, but for a slightly perturbed Hamiltonian. So you can just show in exactly the same way that you generate running the algorithm a Gibbs state which is close to this perturbed Hamiltonian. But that's not exactly what we want, right? We want the Gibbs state, we want this guy to be close to the Gibbs state of the original Hamiltonian. And that's not a big issue because, yeah, in this paper by Poulang and Mokjan in 2009, probably not pronouncing those names properly, but it, this paper tells us that if two Hamiltonians are close, then so are their Gibbs states, right? Which I guess is sort of intuitively reasonable, right? So if this perturbed Hamiltonian H primed and the original Hamiltonian are order epsilon squared close, then their Gibbs states in the trace norm are also, order epsilon close. Wait, I think I made a mistake somewhere here. There's an epsilon floating around. But this result is correct. So yeah, if we use the triangle inequality, like combining, I added an extra epsilon squared in this slide. Sorry, yeah. So if we use the fact that running the DGS algorithm with this locally implementable K primed, we get an expected state close to the Gibbs state of this perturbed Hamiltonian H primed. We combine that with the result that the Gibbs state of the perturbed Hamiltonian H primed and the Gibbs state of the original Hamiltonian H are close up to order epsilon. Then just using the triangle inequality, you get that the expected state of the algorithm is close to the Gibbs state of the original algorithm in the trace norm up to these guys. So it's order epsilon close because this is much, much smaller. I think that's the main result. So yeah, just to display everything together. So if you the algorithm is this, like if you have some local Hamiltonian H, you define this quantum instrument where we've dropped the prime now K, where you have this quantum instrument where the zero outcome is given by conjugating with K, and the one outcome or the wrong outcome is given by resampling to the maximally mixed state rho zero. K is, as we showed before, which just consists of weak measuring local Hamiltonians in the weak measuring local terms in the Hamiltonian. So the algorithm is if we apply this instrument, we measure either zero or one, and after a run of n zeros, we flip a coin, a biased coin labeled by the probability Rn. And if you get heads, then you stop and terminate the algorithm. If you get tails, then you just continue to apply the quantum instrument until eventually the algorithm tells you to stop. So what we've shown is that the expected state at a stopping time is order epsilon close to the Gibbs state. Yeah?
Will you mention the runtime of this algorithm?
Yeah, yeah. Next slide, I think. Yeah. OK, yeah. Yeah. So we have these explicit expressions for lambda and k now. And we also had that expression for the expected runtime of the algorithm. So you just plug them in, and you get this very explicit expression in terms of these parameters for the runtime. And there are some intermediate, like better bounds, but I just wanted to flash this very coarse upper bound at the end. So the runtime is like bounded by something which is inversely proportional to the precision. And that is what appears in this recent paper by Chen, Castoriano, Brandao, and Gillian, which uses these sort of quantum Markov chain methods. This guy here, which is exponential in the inverse temperature, that's a little bit hard to compare with the sort of existing Markov chain methods because there are no closed form expressions generally for an arbitrary Hamiltonian for the runtime of those algorithms. But I guess you would generally expect it to scale exponentially with the inverse temperature, right? Because as the inverse temperature goes to infinity, then it just becomes like ground state preparation, which we know is hard. Yeah. But this is like, these bounds are like very easy to like sort of analytically obtain in this, because you just end up like bounding the traces of these guys, which are just geometric series in K.
So if K is like n, right? Like if I have n qubits or something, and the norm of the Hamiltonian is linear in n, then
K is, oh, so there are n local terms.
Yeah, let's say we have like a 1D.
Okay, yeah.
So K is n, so then this is exponential in beta n.
Yeah.
So wouldn't I be better off just writing down the Gibbs state and taking its trace?
Yeah, in 1D maybe. As in, yeah, in one dimensions, I imagine this is like not optimal. But again, this is like a very like coarse upper bound on this guy. So you might be able to use sort of spectral properties of the Hamiltonian. Like in 1D, I think you have access to a lot more tools to start bounding this guy by much more, in like much more restrictive ways.
But I'm just trying to find examples where it's useful. Because like even in 2D, like K would be N squared. That would be even worse, right? Like, I guess I'm just wondering, like, what are some examples where this is a good runtime?
Yeah, we haven't actually like tested this like numerically on like on systems. Yeah, so yeah, I can't. I think Lucas is working on that, but yeah, I'm not sure. Sorry, I can't say anything more detailed. But yeah, I think it's because in deriving this upper bound, like we've made like a bunch of like, we've just thrown away like a bunch of information about lambda and h in here. So I think presumably you could get much tighter bounds if you use that information. Yeah, like this is like assuming like worst case, I think, and like throwing away a bunch of like minus signs when you start expanding out this expression.
I guess when beta is small, then this could be good, right? Like if beta.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thinking about the case where beta is constant or maybe growing with n, but maybe one should think about beta being small.
If beta is large, then yeah, if beta is large, then I think it starts becoming basically like ground state preparation, right? And this algorithm, I think, converges to Toby's DQE algorithm. But I think, yeah, so whatever sort of runtime bounds you could derive on this would be the same as that algorithm. But I'm not sure in specific systems what the scaling's like. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Maybe I missed something. So does this runtime also include the fact that at every run you might have to weekly measure non-commuting terms? So actually the number of measurements actually is scaling with the number of terms. Like you can't do it all at the same time because there will be.
Right. Yeah, I think runtime here, is like more, the runtime here is just like, it's not like the circuit depth or anything, or like the number of operations in the circuit. Well, I guess that would scale with, will scale with the multiplicative factor times this runtime. Yeah. I think it's true that, in general, you will have to weak measure non-commuting terms, but I think you can.
So you're choosing.
Yeah.
One runtime to be measuring everything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it'd be the application of the quantum instrument. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, but I think in the case of I guess any Hamiltonian is Pauli, but like yeah, you can definitely like parallelize this for each like measurement instance. I think Toby has some results in his DQE paper on the implementation aspects. Yeah. Maybe check that out. Okay. Okay, cool. I think I'm pretty good for time, right? Yeah, nice.
Before you go on, one question.
Yeah.
So in that slide, you threw, it seems like in that coarse upper bound, you threw away the denominator.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what that what that ends up looking like? Does it become roughly the partition function or something?
Yeah, this guy looks very similar to the partition function.
So,
yeah, yeah.
Can you say that the runtime looks like that thing? Exponential over the partition function.
Yeah, I think you could. Yeah, yeah.
So that's like, that seems comparable to some of these techniques for doing imaginary time evolution, right? Using a purification, like the
Polynomial
chain.
Okay.
So runtime looks like roughly that over the partition
function. Over the partition function. Right, okay, yeah. I mean, I think this is exactly the partition function.
Okay.
Well, up to, yeah. So like, I mean, this is like roughly e to the, yeah, if you think of e to the lambda k, k is like 1 minus Hamiltonian. So up to a multiplicative factor, it's like close to the partition function.
Okay.
That's right, yeah.
So that's in common
yeah.
with those methods then? Like this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, that's, thank you. Yeah, I, yeah. Cool. So yeah, yeah, just as a quick thing to mention at the end, say you were actually trying to estimate some expectation values of observables in the Gibbs state. So to do this, you would want to produce multiple samples of the Gibbs state. You would run the algorithm multiple times. And so yeah, another like result for free is that if you keep track of the stopping statistics of the algorithm for multiple runs, then you could obtain an estimate for the partition function. But yeah, I just wanted to flash this. It's I won't go into the details, but exactly like you can show that this expression, so the number of runs of the DGS algorithm you do divided by the number of resets, which is the number of times you get the one outcome, or you just obtain a sample and then restart. Like this guy, this expectation value is exactly as you said. It's basically this guy, trace cosh of lambda k. So yeah, by running the algorithm multiple times, you get an estimate of that guy for free, and so you get an estimate of the partition function for free, up to a multiplicative error, which is the partition function times the precision. Yeah. Okay, I think that's it. Yeah, thank you.
Any questions?
So have you tried implementing the algorithm?
No, I think that's a big to-do at the moment. yeah. I think Toby has some stuff for the DQE, and he's shown that it sort of, in practice, it works very well and not like much better than the sort of these sort of coarse upper bounds. But we haven't tried it for the Gibbs state sampling yet. We definitely should do that. Yeah.
Are there anything we can say about the
Bandwidth of the runtime? Yeah, that's also a big 2D. We haven't really worked on that. Yeah. Guess you get some complicated expression, but it should just be some analytic expression of lambda and k. So in principle, it's not conceptually hard to determine, but we haven't really analyzed it yet. Yeah.
Do you think we can start with something other than the maximum mimic state?
Oh, yeah, that's a super interesting question. I mean, I think in the original, for the ground state problem in the dissipative state engineering paper, they even consider like, yeah, not resampling to the ground state or even like resampling like locally. And certainly in Toby's work where he generalizes it to like arbitrary Hamiltonians, like not frustration-free Hamiltonians, he also thinks about local resampling. Like in this case for the Gibbs sampling, I'm not like super sure. It's not like conceptually obvious to me why you would want to do anything other than resampling to the maximally mixed state, but maybe there is a reason. Because like in the infinite temperature limit, it is just the maximally mixed state, right? And the sort of, low level way in which this algorithm works is that you're basically like molding a Taylor series to the exponential, or like you have an even Taylor series in this measurement operator K, right? And you're trying to mold it to be as close as possible to the exponential Taylor series in terms of the Hamiltonian. So in that sense, like it seems like, you know, taking like the identity as your start point is sort of like makes that kind of easier in a sense, but I'm not sure if there is a,
I guess you can imagine like starting from the Gibbs state of some Hamiltonian that's somehow easier to prepare.
Right, right.
And then changing to the Gibbs state of a different Hamiltonian. And there's some work related to that. So
sounds like adiabatic or
not quite.
Okay.
It's like this, like you're preparing this thermophilic double state.
Oh right, yeah.
You have Hamilton like something like H0 plus V and you have access to the purified thermal state of H0. There's a way to try to change to the thermal state of the full Hamiltonian. So something like that. I wonder if that can be done here with a new framework.
Yeah, that would be.
Okay, that's my video again.
Thank you.